This is the Historians Podcast, and I'm Bob Cudmore, speaking to you from the Empire State Aeroscience Museum. Did I get that right, Pete?
Well, it's aerosciences, plural.
Oh, there's more than one science involving aviation.
Yes, there is.
Okay. Do you know what they are?
Or? Well, it starts with the origin of flight with the Wright brothers, right up through to the rockets that we know send up into space.
Now, I was just at the museum for one of your fundraising breakfasts, and I met Pete Russo. I'd known him from years back in the advertising and radio field, but you now work here, I presume, as a volunteer?
Yes, we're all volunteers except for one paid employee.
So. What drew you to this particular historic site?
Well, I used to be involved with the air shows many, many years ago, and was kind of responsible on the committee to bring in the Concorde back in 1986. And now we're bringing the Concorde back, the model of the Concorde, which we hope to have completed by the end of 2018, next year. And that'll be prominently displayed outside on our front lawn, you might say, the Concorde. And this is a half the size of the original aircraft. And it's made out of fiberglass, and we have parts of the Concorde. This originally was on top of the Times Square building. And then taken down a few years ago, and it was down at the Cradle of Aviation in Suffolk County, Long Island. And they wanted to get rid of it, this model. And so we said, geez, we'd love to have it. And they said, well, it's yours, but you got to come and get it. So it has to be taken apart in pieces in order to be trucked up here. So we have the front end, we have the back end, now we're getting the center part, which is the fuselage where all the passengers would have been sitting in parts of the wing, main wings. So hopefully that'll be up here before the end of this year.
Well, there certainly are a lot of neat things here at the Empire State Aerosciences Museum. At the Schenectady County Airport, which, as I understand it, was 90 years old this year, the year of 2017. In fact, when the airport opened, it had a very distinguished fly-in.
Yes, it had Charles Lindbergh flew in here on July 28th, 1927. To open the airport, and he was going around the country trying to promote aviation. And when he heard that this airport was going to be open, we were the first on his tour of five airports throughout the Northeast. So we were very fortunate to have him here. And today, or actually this summer, when we celebrated the 90th anniversary, we had a gentleman by the name of Tim Clark, who now lives in Saratoga, but he does a living history on Charles Lindbergh. Yep. And he was out of Dallas, Texas, and moved here to Saratoga. And so we were fortunate to have him here for our 90th anniversary celebration, giving a good presentation on the life of Charles Lindbergh.
One thing you told me as we were a touring part of the museum is that Lindbergh was impressed that this was a municipal airport. It was owned and operated by the county of Schenectady.
Right. Most of the airports at that time, back in the 20s, were private airports owned privately because, well, they weren't as big as they are today. Number one, they were mostly all grass strips, and you know, a farmer would turn over parts of his property for an airplane to come and land if he was interested in aviation, which not a lot of people were interested in aviation because it was so new.
Now, in terms of history at this spot, and this spot, by the way, is in the town of Glenville, off of Route 50. I know there are signs on the interstates approaching that you can find the Empire State Aerosciences Museum. So this airport came to be in 1927, but there was also history made here, and in particular in the building where we're doing the interview, in the 1940s by the General Electric Company. What did they do here?
Well, they basically developed jet engines here and armaments for a military aircraft, but mostly the jet engines, and then later on, rockets. Rockets were also produced here. And GE built a bunker up in Malta, which is now vacant, but it was right across from Global Foundries, where Global Foundries is located today. And there, they would test these engines. They would strap them down so that they wouldn't be, airborne. But they would test to make sure they had enough thrust to take a rocket into outer space. So a lot of history is embedded here. And thanks to GE for initiating a lot of it. And then moving it out of Schenectady, jet engines now are produced elsewhere, and rockets, et cetera. But at least everything started here, and that's the important part. And in 1946, they had a grand opening, and they had Mr. Wilson, who was then president of GE, here, along with Stuart Symington, who was a name that a lot of people my age remember. He was Secretary of Defense, and basically Symington was the very first carrier. When he flew back to D.C., he carried with him the very first airmail letter to go to the President of the United States, but it was airborne. Even though he was carrying it, he was a transporter.
Okay. Yes. So again, a lot of history in this spot. And now the exhibits, and we've toured this gallery. You have a lot of models. You have some real aircraft that are in this large hangar space.
Yes, we do. And in fact, we have some World War II aircraft, like a Bell helicopters, and we have the Curtiss Jenny, which was one of the very first airplanes that Lindbergh even flew in, Curtiss Jenny. And then we go from the Wright brothers right on up to the rockets, which I'll show you in Gallery 2.
And you've even got the basket of a hot air balloon.
Oh, yes. Hot air ballooning, and we also have a very large display of Amelia Earhart's flight and the story about her, as well as the aircraft that was used to make the movie Amelia. Mm. So we have that here also.
Well, it seems like you're always on the lookout for things like that, like the Amelia, the plane used, the mock-up used in the movie, or the model of the Concorde and so forth.
We're constantly looking for new avenues so that we want to have more of a hands-on experience instead of just looking at an airplane. We want, especially the younger children, to get in it and try to pretend they're flying it. So we have a lot of that here with some of our aircraft. We open it up to the public. And you don't have to be a child to sit in a cockpit and get a thrill out of sitting in our air park, sitting in a jet like Tom Cruise did in the movie
Top Gun.
Yeah, we have a similar aircraft right out in our airport. Air park. So there's a lot here that is hands-on for children and adults. Plus, we have a simulator of flight, And a lot of people have never been up in airplanes, especially the younger generation. Mm-hmm. So this will give them an experience. It's probably one of our most popular exhibits here is the simulator. And it's a thrill. The first time I sat in it with my young sons at that time, it was a thrill for me too. And I've been flying for quite a while. So
we're talking with Peter Russo. We're at the Empire State Aerosciences Museum at the Schenectady County Airport in Glenville, New York. You're listening to the Historians Podcast.
We depend on your contributions of financial support to keep going with the Historians Podcast. Please make a donation online at GoFundMe.com/Historians2017 or send a donation in the mail. Make the check out to Bob Cudmore. Send to 125 Horstman Drive, Scotia, New York, 12302. And thank you very much. Back to talking about the Empire State Aerosciences Museum at Schenectady County Airport in just a moment. Just thought I'd mention some other aviation museums in New York State. The Cradle of Aviation Museum is located in Garden City, New York, on Long Island, to commemorate Long Island's role in the history of aviation. It's on Charles Lindbergh Boulevard in Garden City. They have 75 air and spacecraft, a hot air balloon, an actual Apollo lunar module, and they talk about why Long Island is the cradle of aviation. Some 60 years ago, the current home of the American Air Power Museum at Republic Airport, also in Long Island, was a part of the Arsenal of Democracy, home to Republic Aviation producing P-47 Thunderbolts in Farmingdale, New York. Moving off Long Island, there's the old Rhinebeck Aerodrome, a living museum with many examples of planes that actually fly from the pioneer era, World War I, and the era of aviation between the world wars. They're located in Red Hook, New York. There's a National Soaring Museum, that's for gliders, that is located in Elmira, New York. And the National Warplane Museum is a warbird and military history museum on the grounds of the Geneseo Airport in Geneseo, New York.
Bob Cudmore back at the Empire State Aerosciences Museum, talking with Peter Russo, a volunteer at the museum. We've now gone through Gallery 2, which was really exciting. There was a lot there about the actual history of this airfield and this area where General Electric tested jet engines. We didn't see his picture, but I'm told that Wernher von Braun came here.
Yes, he did. He came up when GE decided to get into the rocket business, building rockets. And he came up as a consultant from, I believe, Atlanta, and showed GE scientists and engineers who were working on building the Malta test site, how it should be constructed to basically take a rocket engine and strap it down so that it doesn't take off, and just to test to make sure that they have the right mix of fuel and power, how much power is being exerted by the engine itself, because to get into outer space, you need a heck of a lot of power. And that's what they were working on in Malta. And again, that's just right across the street from the Global Foundries. And a lot of the structures are still there in a deteriorating mode, you might say, but they're still there at the Malta test site. And it's very interesting because we were able to get a lot of the original equipment out and restore it into our bunker that is a replica of the bunker that they used in Malta.
So some of the GE research on rockets or jet planes was done here, but this other site you're talking about is some miles from here in Malta, New York. But yes, you've got quite I don't know what you call it, a mock-up of the bunker where they would be protected behind thick walls and so forth.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot of, obviously a lot of fuel being spent by a rocket that's strapped down, and they would build, before the rockets would even be tested, these very deep pits, you might call it, where the flames from the rocket would be absorbed so that it wasn't going to start fires all over the place. Mm-hmm. Because that used to be Luther Forest. You know, a lot of pine trees, and, you know, they certainly didn't want to burn the whole neighborhood down by testing a rocket. So they had to make a lot of precautions, and that's where Warner gave them the advice on how to test these rockets.
Well, I don't know if you remember the Tom Lehrer song and the famous line, "Once the rockets go up, who cares where they come down?" "It's not my department," said Werner von Braun.
How true, how true.
Well, also, I mean, this was valuable and important research, and this happens, but there was what would you call it? Maybe collateral damage. I mean, there's a certain amount of, there's environmental damage to our area. It's frequently in the news, once this site or that site. We were talking to one of the gentlemen from the museum over at the mock-up of the bunker. I mean, I guess they used rather exotic and dangerous chemicals in these rocket tests.
Yes, they did. In fact, Ralph was telling us that they would use glass piping to transport fuel from one source to another, and primarily because it was highly toxic fuel. So I guess it's, you don't touch it.
No.
You know.
But in Gallery 2, and we were had the good fortune to be there when some young people in a group were going through, and they were just excited and running around because you give them things to do. For example, I think maybe you talked about this earlier, but you have this flight simulator that they were just gaga over.
Absolutely. It's a great tool for us. It's one of our best exhibits for children, especially, who have never been up in an airplane to see what flying is like. And we heard them all screaming in delight. These were probably children under the age of 12, I would imagine, having seen them. But they're here on a special tour for children. And we love to do this. And one of our vice presidents, Kevin Millington, takes delight in showing these kids everything about the museum and getting an interest in aviation. Mm. And that's the important thing. As you probably are well aware, there's a need for more pilots, both in the military and in the commercial fields. And what better way than to spark an interest in a young person than to get them a hands-on experience. And that's what they get here at ESAM. We call it ESAM for Empire State Aerosciences Museum.
Tell us about the origin of ESAM. I believe your connection with it started during one of the Schenectady County Airport air shows. And I remember them very well. There hasn't been one in a long time, and maybe there's not going to be another one. But when I first moved here in 1980, these were big events. I always enjoyed them because I lived near the airport, and the Blue Angels would sort of practice over my house. And you'd see that on the one hand, it was very exciting. On the other hand, all these big, fast machines are moving over a suburban neighborhood. You know, it's kind of different from the military. I mean, you expect that the military has an air base here, and, you know, that's important work, and they're doing it. But this was for basically for entertainment, I suppose, and advertising. But those air shows were just, I just thought they were fun.
They were a lot of fun. I was able to work with Steve Israel, who was one of the original organizers of the air shows back in the late 70s and early 80s. And it was something that, unfortunately, our airport is not big enough to handle. What the military, to get the Blue Angels and or the Thunderbirds, or even the Canadian Air Force down here, you need to be able to provide or almost guarantee that there's going to be at least a couple hundred thousand people to watch the air show. Otherwise, they'll go to airports that can handle a quarter of a million people. Steve and I did an air show at Stewart, which was the largest air show on the East Coast in 1987. And there we brought in the Concorde, and we also had the Thunderbirds. But no more.
No. Because, no more at Stewart either?
No, not anymore, because it's now commercial. True. You know, and they can't shut it down from commercial flights. So.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I bet you could have attracted that many people here, but they couldn't have got to it. Like I used to, I mean, it's, you know, we're used to big tourist traffic in this area, you know, mainly from Saratoga or concerts at SPAC or things of that nature. But these were humongous traffic jams. I remember I used to say, I live in Glenville, you know, it's the what's it say, please drive friendly or something when you come in, and it's the scene of the biggest once-a-year traffic jam in the world.
The traffic would be so humongous. I live about a little over a mile from this airport. Like you, I would walk over.
That's
because
how I get there.
Yeah, there's no way you could drive over.
In fact, once they had the only really real untoward incident I remember, and I was working for WGY at the time, and they called me to go when the, I think, a Canadian helicopter crashed or couldn't get off the middle of the runway because, you know, it was the only way to get somebody in here with somebody who would walk.
You know? I know. It was, they were great shows then, and it's in our past, unfortunately.
But is that the era from that the museum came from, or was the museum always here? It's just it's been developed more?
No, actually, the museum started in 1984, and most of the members who were on the committee to organize the air shows, like Ernie Tatro and Steve Israel and a few other people, and Joyce Newkirk, they came here to start the museum. Mm-hmm. And it has grown and grown. We have roughly 254 members, I believe, total. We just had our annual meeting last week, and it's on the grow, and we've got some major plans for the future.
Well, and also in Gallery 2, you've got some space exhibits. They're models, you know, again, popular probably with your younger people and older people as well. And then you've got this huge model of a Japanese aircraft carrier. How did that come to be?
Well, Charlie Wood, who used to own Storytown and The Great Escape, he originally had this ship, which was built for the movie Tora, Tora, Tora. And it's an exact replica. In fact, it has an engine, a working engine in it. And you could actually sail it. If you wanted to go down the Mohawk River or the Hudson River with it, it can sail. But it's built after the aircraft carrier. And we have it on display here at our museum because Charlie Wood, when he passed away, actually, prior to his passing, he donated the entire ship to this museum. He wanted to preserve it, and at that time, I believe The Great Escape had been sold to Six Flags, and they had other ideas.
And we saw the both galleries, the one gallery in this large hangar that was built by GE for research, and then another building with a gallery. But you also have, I'm going to say, real planes. I mean, you know, you got some real planes inside, but outside you've got a whole bunch of airplanes.
There's actually 21 on display outdoors, including two helicopters, which the helicopter was used in Vietnam, and children can actually get in it and play with the controls and whatnot, or adults, mm-hmm. if they so desire. But we have, out of the 21 aircraft, approximately 5 are open so that you can sit in the cockpit and sit inside this huge. My first impression when I saw my very first jet engine or jet plane was the size of it. When you stand next to it and you realize how big these airplanes are and only one person is flying it,
right.
You know, it gives you a different sense about these aircraft.
And some of the early aircraft were quite small, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Very, very small, yeah.
So you can see both here at the museum.
You got it.
Yeah. Now, tell us about the museum's availability and location and so forth.
Well, we start on Memorial Day weekend. The museum is open Saturday and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Every weekend up through Labor Day. And then we go into our winter hours. Actually, I made a mistake. The summer hours are from 10 to 4, but it's open Tuesday through Sunday. The winter hours, which are not Memorial Day and Labor Day, but right after Labor Day, is strictly weekends, Saturday and Sunday, with the same hours, 10 to 4. So that takes us through the winter winter season and early spring.
And do you charge admission?
Yes, we do. It's $8 for an adult and $5 for children under the age of 12. And under the age of 5, it's free.
And what about the groups that come, let's say school groups?
We have, in fact, we just saw one school group in here. At the museum, we try to have them almost on a weekly basis. We have many, many schools from the Capital District area, not only Schenectady, but mm-hmm. Albany and Troy and Saratoga. In fact, the group here is from Troy today.
You still have, maybe there's not an air show here anymore, but you still have kind of events. I mean, every so often, like a World War II war bird will come down here.
Yeah, well, we had the summer for the 90th anniversary of the airport. We had locally owned aircraft, such as the Corsair, which was a very popular fighter jet in World War II, that's owned privately by a gentleman just north of here in Saratoga. And we had T-6 trainers, which the Air Force would use to train pilots. Mm-hmm. We had those here. So we had quite a few aircraft that flew in also.
Well, Pete Russo, I want to thank you for taking me around the Empire State Aerosciences Museum. You have a good day.
You too. Thank you, Bob.
You've been listening to the Historians Podcast. I'm Bob Cudmore.